This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. As Native people in Michigan were exercising their rights to vote this month, they were also taking part in a unique piece of Michigan history. This was one of the first states to negotiate citizenship with Native people. Eric Hemingway is director of archives and records for the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians. He's also a member of the Michigan Historical Commission. Eric, welcome back to Stateside.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
So, state citizenship was on the table for Native people starting in 1850. Can you set a little context for us about what was going on at the time? I mean, this was at a point when a lot of tribes had already been forced to concede a great many land rights, correct?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked about context because it's really critical to understanding why tribes were going for state citizenship at this specific time period. And leading up to the 1850 Michigan Constitution, the states have been engaged in a series of treaties with the federal government. All the tribes throughout Michigan were signing various treaties, ceding millions of acres of land, and they were trying to reserve a land base, a home base in their homelands with these treaties, and also to retain rights to natural resources and to obtain goods. And so the treaties were being negotiated at this time, but there was also, in the previous decades, Indian removal that had been sweeping through the eastern part of the United States. And while most of the focus on Indian removal has been in the southeast with the Cherokees and the Choctaws and the five civilized tribes, removal was occurring in the Great Lakes, and it was occurring here in Michigan, where Potawatomis were being hunted and removed to Kansas. So it was coming north, and the tribes seen this, and they were taking every step to avoid removal. And removal is just a very brutal piece of American and Native history where tribes were hunted and forced to march out to Oklahoma and Kansas, and many tribal members died from just the journey itself, from exposure, starvation,
right,
sickness, and then they were forced to live in this alien environment on the plains. And tribes were doing everything in their power to avoid this.
Yeah. What was the thinking among the Odawa and Ojibwe leaders and some of the other Anishinaabe about why citizenship might help to shield them in some sense?
Well, if they were realizing very quickly that they had to adapt to American culture and society as being forced upon them with civilization policies that were being enacted by the federal government, and they seen that they had to reevaluate not just themselves and their communities, but their relationships with the federal and state governments. Previously, they had been engaged in a series of wars to protect their lands and rights. But after losing these wars, they had to adjust very quickly. And part of that adjustment was citizenship. If they could obtain citizenship, they would have a more equal footing. I'm not going to say it was completely equal because it wasn't, but a more equal footing in courts with government-to-government relationships and also their neighbors.
So what was in it for the settler state government to agree to negotiate this? I mean, did they realize what was at stake here?
Well, there was not consensus with the states having citizenship, and the tribes were pushing for this immediately. I know more about the Odawa, obviously, because I work with the Odawa community and have grew up in an Odawa community. And we had leaders as early as the 1820s recognize the need for citizenship, and they started to write petitions. They started to write letters to the state government and to the federal government for state and federal citizenship. And we had a very close ally with one of the priests here at Little Traverse, Harbor Springs, Father Piez, and he would work with our community on trying to obtain state citizenship, largely to protect lands. So it wasn't a consensus push by the state to see this, but it was a consensus push by the tribes.
Was it controversial within the emerging Michigan government, which was going through a constitutional convention at that time? Was it controversial to have the idea of citizens that were also part of individual nations within the state?
Absolutely. And there was this blatant discrimination and racism against tribes during this time period. And it reflects in the Constitution of 1850 in and of itself, where it says that a tribe to obtain citizenship has to, one, renounce their tribal citizenship, their tribal identity, and two, demonstrate that they are civilized. I still to this day don't know the matrix or the formula for proving that you are civilized, but that's written into the Constitution. So tribes had to prove this civilization and then at the same time renounce their tribal identity. So just that type of wording to me shows that it was controversial because tribes were being labeled savages, heathens, pagans at this time, unequals in society and in government. So to have this population seen as unequal, obtain citizenship, without a doubt would have been controversial in some populations.
So when state citizenship was achieved, how did it end up affecting the lives of Native people?
Well, statehood being achieved in, I believe, 1837, this opened up the tribal lands to white settlers. So before this, it was a territory and it was not as settled. There wasn't as many American settlers coming in. But once you have statehood, you have to have a certain population. And then it opens it up to more population. So on the ground level, April, you're having people compete for resources of land, food, water. This is day-to-day living where people are going hungry. They have to relocate their villages and their communities. So it had a huge impact on every single community and every single Native individual.
Once the state of Michigan did start to offer citizenship to Native people, what was the net effect on people's lives? Did it have the impact that the Anishinaabe negotiators had hoped for?
Well, I think yes and no. I don't think there's a clear-cut answer to this. This 1850 Constitution is right in the middle of a very contentious time for the tribe, particularly the Odawa in northern Michigan. We signed a major treaty in 1836, ceding 16 million of acres of land to the United States to stay in northern Michigan. But removal was still a threat. We still were being threatened with removal in 1837, 1838. And we had to sign another treaty in 1855 to remove the threat of removal. So this Constitution is right in that time period of great uncertainty. It's unreal for me to think of this time period where the army would come and remove you by force. So they're taking all these steps to avoid that. And this is part of that, of being civilized, being a citizen, you know, farming, doing what the government is asking you to do just to stay home. So there's a lot of moving parts that are going into this time period, especially in 1850.
Do you think that in hindsight, it did remove some of the risk that people were worried about removal?
I think it did to some degree. I think every step that the tribes took to stay home worked because we're still here for the most part. They were demonstrating that we are equals in the sense of having of being citizens, and they were enacting their own government, their agency of, you know, meeting and writing these letters and petitions. So I think it did work to some degree, but this also was this, you know, larger progress towards federal citizenship. So they're taking all these steps, not just for state citizenship, but federal citizenship, and tribes across the country wouldn't achieve U.S. citizenship until 1924. We were the last population to get U.S. citizenship.
Now, see, this is interesting because the Dawes Act, a piece of legislation that was both very influential and kind of infamous in Native circles, the Dawes Act, among other things, offered citizenship to people who accepted the way that the U.S. government was dividing Native lands. What else was going on that sort of slowed the process down?
Well, for instance, I mean, just the fact that Natives aren't being recognized as equals. So when Native people would come to, you know, your local governments or even state governments, they were still just being seen as savages. And some government officials, some local officials just weren't going to have a conversation with a savage. It was beneath them. It wasn't worth their time. And there was this idea that all Natives should be removed just out of the close proximity of white settlers. So that's working against us. And then there's the idea that Natives don't have an inherent right to their lands. And this is this idea of manifest destiny that Natives have the right to possess land, but they don't have the right to own it. So that's working against us. So there's these large oppressions that are in every Native community, including ours here in northern Michigan. And then you're trying to work against this. You're going against this tide of adopting this foreign government policy of citizenship And so you're taking on this foreign government's idea of citizenship. So you can use that to fight for your rights of owning land, of taking people to court, just being equals in your homelands.
It must have been a very, very hard sell for a lot of Native people who really did have a sense of their and knew the importance of their own sovereignty.
Absolutely. You're walking in two worlds. That's a saying that's used commonly in Indian country, where you're walking in your tribal world, but you have to walk in this American world at the same time. So they're straddling, you know, these cultural and governmental and societal differences. At one point, you're retaining your nativeness, but then at the same time, you have to take on this Americanness to stay home. And it all comes back to home. That's what we're trying to do. And we're really fortunate here in Northern Michigan, the Odawa at Little Traverse. We're in our homelands, the same homelands when Columbus landed. So not many tribes can say, you know, we're in the same homelands upon contact. But the Odawa at Wagonuxing at Little Traverse can say that. A lot of this is due to good leadership, strategic leadership, adjusting very quickly, day to day sometimes, of trying to, you know, navigate these stormy waters of state government, federal government, white settlers, missionaries, and priests coming into your areas and trying to convert you and change you. But they knew that citizenship was key to voting and to having your voice heard. They knew this immediately. And so they acted to have their voice heard.
It sounds like none of this would have happened if it hadn't been the advocacy in the Little Traverse Bay Band and elsewhere to talk about citizenship in that way.
Yeah, every tribe knew this, and they were at different levels of, you know, their own governments and their own agency. I just speak strongly from Little Traverse because that's where I'm at and where I'm from, but other tribes were doing the same thing. It's hard to relate to people how quickly the change was happening. In 1850, you're pushing for state citizenship, but only 40 years earlier, the men in your community are fighting the United States in the War of 1812 to try to keep them out of Michigan. So within one generation, you have this massive shift in your communities of taking up arms against this one country, and then you're trying to become citizens of that same country. This all happens in some people's lifetimes. So it happens really quickly, and they are, like I said, adjusting year to year, sometimes day to day. Tribes, they take this seriously. And I just was reading an article about the recent presidential election where Arizona, the tribal population, had a big influence on the outcome of that state, where a large population of primarily Navajos came out and voted. And this happened in Minnesota and Wisconsin as well, where there was very close in the presidential election and the tribes came out and they voted. So their voices were being heard. And it's all because of their ancestors making sure they had taken the steps so their voice would be heard.
Eric Hemingway is director of archives and records for the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians. Eric, it's good talking to you. Thanks for taking some time.
Thank you very much.